Welcome to Catch the Craze. We are the heart of the industry, baby.
I'm so crazy. You so crazy. Crazy.
I'm
so crazy. You so crazy. Crazy.
I'm
so crazy. You so crazy. Crazy.
I'm
so crazy. You so crazy.
Coming this summer, Daystar Studios fantasy thriller, The Quest. Check your local comic shops and visit www.daystar-studios.com. October 28th, come down to the Holiday Inn in New York City to the New York Comic Book Spectacular featuring guest of honor, Michael Avon Oman, as well as other artists, Neil Volks, fantasy artist Ken Kelly, Mike Lilly, Keith Williams, Sam the Crazy Man Vera, and many more. The New York Comic Book Spectacular, October 28th at the Holiday Inn, 440 West 57th Street. Be there or be square. The world is talking about Dune, the star of the critically acclaimed series There's an Alien in My Toilet by creator Samuel Vera. Get your hands on the first official trade paperback release this winter. Visit DuneesWorld.com for more information. Catch the craze.
Uncle Sam, catch the craze, baby. What's up? What's up? How you doing? How you doing? I'm here. I'm here to stay. Aight. Hey, yo, Tony.
Yeah.
Tony, get my pescetties. Aight. Get my pescetties and me balls, aight. Give me some garlic nuts.
Some garlic nuts. I'm going to give you some nuts across your head.
What's up? It's Catch the Craze here. I'm Sam the Crazy Man Vera, the host with the most. And I'm ready to rock on. Today we have a special guest on this show. Her name is Shannon Muir, and she is an author, and she's a screenwriter, and she has an extensive history in the animation business, and we'll be talking to her soon later on the show, and, but before we can get into that, let's get into this, because you can get with that, or you can get with this. So, what's going down? All right, we're about a couple of weeks away from some, New York events. One is the New York Comic Book Spectacular, which is held at the Holiday Inn in New York City, and I'm going to be there. So is a bunch of other people, and the guest of honor is none other than Mike Avon Oman, and Mike is going to be there. He's a friend of ours, and he was, you know, on Catch the Craze before. We hung out in San Diego and catch up all the time at the Big Apple, so he's going to be the guest of honor there, and it's a good show. It's a good... I mean, if you are a comic book collector, this is a show for you, because the retailers that are there, the vendors that are there, they have the best deals. I mean, they have 50-cent bins, and they have dollar bins, and the quarter bins, and I mean, and so many back issues that you just can't handle. So, I mean, if you're a diehard collector, go there. If you are a sketch fan, I mean, collector, you like sketches and original art, then yeah, that's a place to go too, because there's some really hardcore artists there, and you can get your stuff, you know, some sketch cards and, or original prints and things like that. If you're a fan of There's an Alien in My Toilet, of course yours truly will be there signing away and doing my thing as I always do, and then going out to have a little brew afterwards with my peoples. So we always do that. It's a ritual. Every time after New York Comic Book Spectacular, we go out either to Hooters or some other place, and we have a couple of brews and some wings and chat up and catch up. And so that's going to be cool. And that is on the 28th of October. But on the 27th of October, you didn't know, the 27th of October is CAG's Halloween event for Psychosis 2. Yeah, I didn't get to be there. I wasn't there last year. at the Halloween party for the release of the original Psychosis number one, volume number one, because I was in Dallas, Texas, and I was donating my time to raise money for the Arthritis Foundation. I was helping out at the Bone Bash, the annual Bone Bash. It's like a Halloween, it's like a costume party, and it's an event. It's held at this hotel, and lots of seating and catered food, and you know, so I help with the props and all the bit. Hold on, there's someone on the crazy hotline. Okay, I answered that call. They don't know that I'm recording? Jeez Louise. So anyway, donating my time, because I don't know if you know, but there are kids who are suffering with arthritis, and they're born with the disease and in this illness. And I don't know if you know what it does to you, but you know what you hear when you get older. You know, people get their hand cramps or whatever, or they can't they can no longer move certain joints because of the pain or whatever. But imagine being born with this. So there are children that are born and they just can't move. It's like a form of paralysis, and they're born with arthritis. And so, you know, I donated my time, and I wish I could have been there this year, but unfortunately I started a new job. I left my company of 13 years, and I went to their number one competitor, and I couldn't, you know, I've only been there 3 months, and I couldn't get the week off. So, but I'm with them in spirits. But charity's a big thing. I don't know if a lot of you comic fans, listeners out there, how involved you are with charity, but I am too. I am, and you know, I've just donated some money to this organization, which spends that money on funding materials and getting equipment for underprivileged schools that don't have the resources that schools in the more profitable, I guess, or well-to-do neighborhoods would have. So, always find something to do. And I know that for Thanksgiving, we're going to be going to soup kitchen and doing some things there and helping donate our time, feeding the homeless and less fortunate. So, find time to donate, give back without asking for any thanks. Thank you in return. Do it from your heart. Get involved. You know, there's something in every neighborhood and every state where you can do something. So, you know, with that said, I don't want to start making you guys cry and saying, "Hey, Sam, you're turning into an infomercial." But no, this is, you know, it's something I believe in. It's, you know, from the bottom of my heart. So, besides that, what else is going on? So the Halloween party is going to be at the Twins Pub, where the annual indie after party is always held. It's at the Twins Pub in New York City. It's a couple blocks away from the Jacob Javits Convention Center. You can look it up. The Twins Pub. So the Twins Pub, and it's going to be hot, and I will be there this time. And I don't know if I'm going to have a costume. I'm going to try. I know last year I bought a bogus Hellboy costume, and I don't know if I trashed it. I don't know what I did with it. I was pissed when I got it in the mail because it says authentic. And when I got it, it was just some hokey. Ugh, it was gross. So then I went to a costume place, and I got me this big skeleton demon-looking thing. He's smoking a cigar with a top hat and long hair. And I went and got the cloak and the gown and the gloves and the fingernails. And, I mean, I went all out, and I got the voice box and it manipulated my voice. And, you know, so this year, I don't know if, I don't want to be the only, you know, knucklehead that's going to this party in a costume. So, yo, if you're going to go to the second annual Psychosis CAG-sponsored event, wear a costume. Come on, man. Stop being cheesy. For cheesy maneezy. So, that's that. Now, the year end, well, it's not really the end, but for New York, well, see, there's two New York things going on. You know, one in November, one in December. But for me, my heart of hearts, the Big Apple is the last Comic Con of cons. You know what I mean? The Big Apple National. That's going to be in November. I'm going to be there. God willing, I'm going to have my trade paper back done in time. I'm at the grind right now. I'm at the grind. I got to get it to the printer. Hopefully my boy will get me at least enough copies that I can sell. I'll be at the Big Apple National. It's going to be lots of fun. You know, the cheerleader from Heroes is going to be there. Hayden, whatever her last name is. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be great. It's going to be, you want to be there. The Big Apple National at the Penn Plaza Pavilion is the year end show. The show of all shows. The kahuna of kahunas. You know what I'm saying? It is the diehard comic book fan show. I mean, all the other shows like Wizards and all that, they're like extravagant. But the Big Apples are hardcore. It's like going to a Bally's and then going to a Ghost Gym. Bally's is very pretty, very put together. You know what I'm saying? Everyone's worried about their outfits and making sure that they have the newest Reebok and gear on. And, you know, it's like they don't want to break a sweat. But then you go to a Gold's Gym. And it's hardcore, rough, rugged, and raw. It's just diesel muscles sweating the grind. You don't care about what you look like. You care about your body. You know what I'm saying? You're building those muscles. You're working on those trapezoids and those calves and your pecs and your lats. You know what I'm saying? You're working on all those things. And that's what you're concerned with. And it's hardcore. It's dirty. It's sweaty. It's smelly. It smells like fart and sweat. That's the difference. That's what Big Apple is like. Big Apple is fart and sweat. Where's the conventions of glitz and glamour? You know, some say there's two big differences. I know you guys are like, dang, Sam, you're saying that stuff on the air. Yeah, I know. I need some air after the fart and sweating. But that's how basically I can sum it up. The Big Apple, I love the Big Apple. I love the fans. They're hardcore. They're gully. They're just real. You know what I'm saying? I love the people. I love the artists. I mean, I see the same faces all the time. Some people I don't even talk to, but we see each other all the time. We have respect for each other. But it's a great place to be. So the Big Apple National Convention, the year-end closer, you want to be there. It's in November. I think 16th, 17th, 18th, I believe. So go to BigAppleCon.com and you get all the information you need on that event. And the last one, and I just signed up for, is the New York, the anime convention at the Jacob Javits Convention Center. I will be there. Why? Why am I going to go to an anime convention? You're not anime, yo. You don't do anything anime. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Nah, but it's not really. But my style of art is like anime in a sense where, you know, it's big eyes and cartoony. The reason why I'm doing it is, one, because I want to expose my product to another market, and two, been working on my 3D animated trailer of this Kneeling in My Toilet, which I will be, you know, featuring at the anime show. So I've been teasing it. I'm going to be teasing a short on the website, but I'm going to be, you know, showing it, debuting it at the anime convention in December. So I signed up. I'm there, you know. So those are my last conventions, the last three conventions of the year for Sam the Crazy Man Vera. So you're going to want to be there because at the anime shows, I will be launching my children's book collection, which is, I haven't given it a title yet. I don't know if it's, you know, Many Worlds of Samuel Vera, you know, Stories by Vera. I don't know what it is going to be, but it's going to compose of, you know, there's, Duty's Adventures. It's going to have, the Oogly Booglies, and it's going to have Mandy Pandy, which was just completed by Hector Rodriguez, one of the members of CAG, and he was on the show, and he's the creator of a book called Hell's Blood. And I know on the show, last show, I said Hell's Bound. I know, I'm a knucklehead. It's Hell's Blood. My bad. My bad. Even I make mistakes too, okay? So, that's what's going on there. So on another side of business, The Hobbit. You know, I'm a big fan of The Lord of the Rings, you know? I remember I was, fourth grade is when I first read The Hobbit, and I fell in love with it. And believe it or not, it was in the school books. That's how I read it. You remember when you had English as a kid in elementary school? And they had stories in the books. So one of the stories was The Hobbit. And I read The Hobbit. And I fell in love. And it was just so mysterious. And it was just so amazing and wonderful. And then I remember as a kid when I, you know, through the commercial, and it's going to have, you know, the Hobbit on television, the cartoon, the animated feature film. And I was like, floored. I was flabbergasted. So we rented an apartment. It was a two-family house, and we were on the second floor. We rented out the second floor. Below us were relatives, and they rented out the first floor, I guess, whatever. But the basement was an empty, dark basement, and it had one room. You know, walls and a door, a room in there, all the way at the end of the basement. So I got my friends from the neighborhood, all the guys, together. And we're like fourth graders. So we all go to that room, and I had a little 13-inch, I don't know if it was color, black or white, I don't remember, but it was a 13-inch TV. And we put it in that room. And they're giving this at, I think it was like 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And they all come over, and we get blankets, and we get goodies. You know, we get chips, and sweets and all this kind of junk, right? So we turn off all, we want to be knuckleheads and we turn off all the lights in the basement. And, you know, we all go into this room, we close the door, and we start watching it. Now, when you're watching The Hobbit as a kid, it's scary. And then they start singing the songs, where there's a whip, there's a way. Where there's a whip, there's a way. Dum, 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 dum. We don't want to go to war today, but the keeper of the whip is going to make us pay. You don't remember that? Anyway, so we're watching that, and we're frightened as heck. So now we hear a noise in the basement. And, you know, the room had like a glass window in the room where you can see out. I don't know if there was like an old shop they used to use in the room, and that was like the manager's office, the way it was set up, where the manager could look out and see his staff. I don't know how it went, but that's what it looked like. So imagine an office in the basement, and it's all concrete. And so we're scared. We're looking, and it's just pitch black. You can't see anything, but you hear noise out there. And we're scared, and it's six of us, six boys in there, scared as heck. No one wants to go out. Everyone's hiding under the blankets, screaming. And it's my brother who scared the crap out of us. And, you know, and the reason why we find out is because, you know, we finally got the nerve to open up the door and try to go out and, you know, using your hands to reach for the walls and trying to find the light switch. And that's when they attacked. You know, my brother got us. And so it was, you know, you peed in your pants and, you know, your heart's in your throat. And it was just horrible. Horrible. I never forgive him for that. So, anyway, The Hobbit. I'm looking, you know, I'm wondering what's going on with New Line Cinema and Samuel Jackson. That's crazy. Peter Jackson. Did you know Peter Jackson sued New Line Cinema, you know, for a breach of contract because, you know, they didn't distribute the funds they promised him. So he wanted to open up the books and see and see how much revenue they've taken in and just to determine what they shorted him. And so they didn't want to open up the books, and they've been battling. So, the head of New Line said, you know, Peter Jackson will never work on New Line Cinema as long as he works there. And Peter Jackson says he'll never work on The Hobbit until he won't even discuss The Hobbit or anything unless this is settled out of court first. Well, you know, out of court. So then New Line Cinema got fined by the court, the judge, because they didn't open up the books or bring the books to court so that they can review it. And so they got a big fine. And then they were talking about Sam Raimi doing it, but the fans are not going to accept Sam Raimi to do this because the only person that's fit for this is Peter Jackson. No one can do it. I mean, look what he's done with the trilogy, you know, with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Look what he's done. It's a masterpiece. It's flawless. It's just beautiful. You know what I mean? That is filmmaking. I mean, he's taken it to a different level, and he's dedicated years of his life to blessing this project. So, and I, along with many, many fans out there, don't want to see Sam Raimi or anyone else do it. And I had to do the actors. The actors will only support Peter Jackson. So now, you know, on Entertainment Weekly, I subscribe to Entertainment Weekly. I get it for free because I am a publisher and I'm part of many different organizations. So as a compliment that I get, I guess, as a reward, I get certain perks. And this is one of the perks. I get Entertainment Weekly on a regular basis. And, you know, and Undercovers is after years of feuding Peter Jackson and New Line Cinema get closer to making The Hobbit and another $1 billion. that's a lot of dope. Can I just be on the set? You know, throw away garbage or something? Can I be a part of this? Peter, I don't know if you noticed, but I got skills. I'm a marketing guru. You know, I'm an artist. I'm a web designer. I'm passionate. I'm aggressive. You know, I'm fit. I can be a warrior. Whatever. Let me work on your damn movie, please. I want to be in The Hobbit. Please. Peter, what do I need to do? Let's make it happen, all right? Let's have your office call my office and square things away. Anyway, so I'm hoping this gets settled because New Line Cinema's contract ends in 2010. So that's only a couple years away. If they don't stop making this film now, they never will get it out on time. So if the contract ends, then the family that owns The Hobbit will take it to someone else and have Peter Jackson do it. So, New Line, come on, stop playing stupid. Give him his money. He made you so much money. You guys are freaking living life. Give him some money, all right? Couple mil. Give me a couple mil, all right? Damn, give me a mil. Shit, just for watching. I sat through all three of them, like 20 times. I can recite the lines. So, with that said, I've picked up dozens of books, man. Comic books. And I haven't read Jack Diddles. You know, I did read Iron and the Maiden, and I love the series. I've read 1, 2, and 3. Iron and the Maiden is by Aspen, you know, Michael Turner's company. You know, bless you, Michael Turner. I know you're going through some stuff with the, you know, your cancer and everything. And, you know, I pray that you get better. But you're a talented individual. You're gifted. You're giving the world of comic books so much to look forward to. But, so, you know, Iron and the Maiden is a good story. Great artwork. I mean, the designs are fantastic. And it's just stupendous. So, I've picked up Iron and the Maiden. I've picked up Mouse Templar. Or Mice Templar, or you know, Templar of the Mouse, or whatever. I picked that up, and that's a good story. And I've picked up dozens of other books that, unfortunately, I don't have in front of me. I have them somewhere on a shelf because I have to get to each and every one of them one at a time. So you know, I read Entrepreneur, I read Money, I read Entertainment Weekly, I read the New York Times. I'm reading a lot of things, and it's hard for me to keep up with a lot of stuff. So I'm trying. So. On the other front, good news, some progress with There's Nailing in My Toilet and getting some licensing out there and some companies that are interested. So we're currently talking and, I'll let you know when things progress on that front. If you're not listening to the Comic Book Novice Radio Show, listen to them. Those are my boys. Good show. It's every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. You can log on. You can download it, you can listen online, or you can listen if you live in Long Island or some parts of New York where you can hear it, or some parts of Jersey where you can hear it on an AM station. So, a lot of great things happening, Brian Kong, fantastic sketch artist, he's done things for Lord of the Rings, he's done things for baseball, Major League Baseball, for Marvel Comics, and the Wizard of Oz collection. He's going to be at the Big Apple and the New York Spectacular, so... With that said, I'm just trying to remember. Hey, thank you to my sponsors. That's what I want to say. Thank you to my sponsors. I know it's been crazy. I haven't been consistent with shows, but you still stood by me, and you're not pulling away with your contracts and all that stuff. So, and for the new sponsors that are that I'm currently talking to, what I'm saying, this is an opportunity to get your name out. I'm telling you, the hits on this show is fantastic. You listeners out there, why you support this lonely guy sitting in a room, I cannot fathom. But I thank you for it. The hits are just. Crazy. Imagine those. Forget about it. So Catch the Craze is a force to be reckoned with. We're going on my second year. When you listen through all the trials and tribulations, baby, we went through some stuff. I still think Books with John would have been a great hit. We could have had that on Saturday Night Live, but damn, John, why'd you pull out, kid? So with that said, we're gonna take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Shannon Muir. And we're listening to all the fantastic stories and her experiences going after her dream job. And that's what I'm saying. Do you love what you're doing now? Can you say that you are fulfilled? Because I'm not. You know what I mean? I still manage. I manage shoes. You know what I mean? I'm a manager in a major high-end retail establishment, and that's not what I want to do for my life. What I want to do is be what Charles Schulz has become, what Todd McFarlane has done with his life. Shannon Muir can say that she's happy with what she has accomplished because she set a goal and she said, this is what I want to do with my life, and she took control and she went after it. It's a great story, and I want you guys to listen to it. And please, if you have any questions, she has a website, she has a blog and a forum. You can answer questions, or you can do it on ours, on Catch the Craze. So I'm Sam the Craze Man Vera, and we'll cut into this break, and we'll be back with Shannon Muir. Peace out, baby. Man, I've been working forever on this project. Nobody knows about me, my company, or anything that I have to offer. I don't have the budget for those big advertisements in those magazines. I mean, I can afford a little bit. But how do I know I'm getting my money's worth? What's a guy like me to do?
I hear you. I understand. Let's make it happen today. Visit CatchTheCraze.com. We have all kinds of packages for all types of budgets. So you want to expose your product? What are you waiting for? Visit CatchTheCraze.com right now. Let's make it happen. Another year, another national at the Big Apple Penn Plaza Pavilion, the Big Apple National Convention, once a year, the year-end closer for New York City. It's all where it started, this is where it's happening, this is where it's going to end. That's right, Samuel Vera, Crazy Comics, will be launching the trade paperback, volume number one of There's an Alien in My Toilet, Duty, the first 6 issues, work to you, from me, to you. Catch the Craze, baby, November, Big Apple Comic Con, the National. See you there.
2 years after Duty's first trip to Earth. Location, Laboria. Haven to smugglers, heroes, and others.
It was amazing. I mean, they unleashed an entire arsenal at me. A futile attempt.
You don't say.
There was a lone soldier.
A soldier? Wow.
Mr. Gorf, I understand you may be a hero in some sectors. Need I remind you, you are in the company of a superior intellect and should never disrupt one while in the midst of a statement.
You are correct. I apologize. Please, continue.
Where was I? Oh, yes. There was a lone soldier, outnumbered and surrounded. They came from the air, the sea, the land!
To find out what happens next in...
Hi, I'm Duty from Uranus.
Visit CrazyComics.com for all of your Duty adventures.
Okay, we're back with Catch the Craze Podcast Audio Mix. I'm your host with the most, Sam the Crazy Man Vera. And like I said before, we have a very special guest on the show. And her name is Shannon Muir. And she is a writer. She's an author of a new project that we're going to talk about very soon. And she's done scripts and many other things for film. Hello, Shannon. How are you doing?
Doing fine today. Thank you.
Okay, so let's give the audience a little history about who you are and where you're from. Where did you originate from?
Was born in San Diego, California, was a Navy brat, so went with my father when he was stationed in Japan and later Hawaii.
Wow.
Then he retired to Washington State where he was born in mid-80s, and I lived there until I moved here back to L.A. in 1996.
Wow. So what was that experience like? It seems like you moved around a lot.
Compared to a lot of other kids that I've known that grew up in the military, they'll always tell you, it seems like we moved around a lot more than you. But very huge cultural influence on me. I know that a lot of my personal interest in Japanese animation and in manga very much comes out of the fact that I grew up watching that stuff as a kid.
Right.
I mean, granted, I wasn't watching like a lot of the stuff that's on, nighttime television, like the Adult Swim stuff. But just to see that, that kind and that style of animation was definitely an influence on the stuff that I've gone on to do today.
Right, and that's basically because of where you were raised, or because you were so exposed to that type of animation, and not more of the Western animation.
Pretty much. Like, for example, when we were in Japan, all we got, bear in mind this was the late 1970s, all we really got in terms of the Western animation was, old Lincoln cartoons and stuff on AFRTS, Armed Forces Radio Television services. So the majority of what I could see outside of that, I was actually watching, in Japanese, but I was watching the visuals. For example, I remember seeing Gatchaman and then moving back here and seeing Battle of the Planets and knowing that was the same show.
Right. Right. But were there specific differences between the two? Considering, I know that sometimes when something crosses over to the States, it gets edited or things get changed for the sake of the audience. So were there any major differences between the two?
I had been, for the stuff that I recognized, I had been too little.
Right.
Captured enough of the nuances to say. But I would definitely say part of it, too, for me is the fact I was raised by a dad who was and still is very much into science fiction and fantasy. And so I grew up with, my nighttime bedtime stories were J.R.R. Tolkien and The Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
So... And most of the stuff that we were getting Western-wise was Looney Tunes comedy, and I don't gravitate to the comedic.
Right.
So it just sort of stuck with me.
Okay. So how did that influence you as a child growing up? I mean, what things did you do to embrace that? Did you read more? Did you write? Did you start writing?
Absolutely. The reading and the writing I did a lot of new. It's interesting because I didn't really know that I wanted to be a writer until I was about 10 years old. And
That's pretty early.
We had some poetry assignments that we were needing to do, and the instructor had us doing something with rhyming couplets, and I did this rhyming poem about a toy store, which to me was just this throwaway thing, but I had done to her such a fantastic job. They were putting what they considered the best of the students' work into a showcase at the major mall there in Pearl City, Hawaii, and she wanted to put my poem up as one of the items at the mall, which to me was a big deal because, I'll be honest, I wasn't as crazy about my fifth grade teacher as I was about some of the others that I worked with over the years. And the idea that here's this woman who I don't always get along with, who thinks enough of me to want to, to show me off as one of the best students of the class, and something stuck. And then went on to sixth grade. We had to do stories every week with our spelling words. The best ones were consistently getting read to the class. That teacher was consistently reading my stories to the class, one of which ended up in the mall again that year. I started to get a clue that maybe this was something I really ought to take seriously.
Right. Well, so what were some of the things that you tried to tackle as a child? Any specific projects that you wanted to nourish or try to develop on your own?
For times there, it was my younger sister Leslie and myself would collaborate as well. We tried to write an entire mystery novel. Uh-huh. I worked on an entire SF novel that I'll admit was very Star Blazers inspired, perhaps a little too much so, but I was very much into that particular show at that particular point. And again, that was where most of my stuff gravitated, was I read science fiction and fantasy and loved it, so that's what I wanted to try to write. But the real breakthrough for me, where the connection turns into animation, which is where all this is leading to, is when we moved to Washington State, there were two shows in particular that really caught my eye for the storyline and the animation, which they also both happened to be shows adapted from Japan, and those were Robotech and Voltron Defender of the Universe.
Right.
Well, I got fascinated with Voltron enough that I came up with my own character and some vehicles and a huge background story behind that, and wrote up in what is, in a professional term, called a premise, which is basically in a couple paragraphs describing what the whole concept is that you're pitching, that you're hoping will ultimately get turned into a television script. And not knowing any better, at 13, I mailed that to my local affiliate that was showing the Voltron episodes, hoping that they would get it onto the company, and not knowing what would happen to it. A couple months passed, I got sent back a generic promotional packet, which was like, thank you for sending in and all that. And it's like, so I really wanted a critique of my story, which in the meantime, I'd gone on and developed it into like 21 episodes of stuff. And I'm like, I really wanted feedback.
Right.
Well, the one thing I had gotten from getting that promo packet was I had the direct address of World Events Productions in St. Louis.
Wow.
And I knew enough from the credits who the executive producer was. So I bundled up everything, and I sent it directly to the executive producer's desk.
Nice.
Yeah. For several months went by, and I didn't hear anything. And I thought, okay, they just don't care, no big deal. And life went on. And one weekend, I'm at home, and my mom takes a really long time coming in with the mail, which seemed really odd because it was the middle of winter and it was cold outside. And why is mom standing outside? So I went and I looked, and I saw that she was still at the mailbox looking at this envelope. And over her shoulder, I can see the blue embossed logo of World Events. And I'm like, Mom, come in here with that letter. And it turned out to be from the head writer of the show, who had been out of the country at the time, I believe, was doing the initial legwork for the follow-up show that they did, Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs. And he wrote back a really nice two-page letter with the analysis I had been looking for and wishing me success in the future. And if that wasn't a pat on the back, it's like, here's somebody who took me seriously, and I'm 13 years old.
Wow. Wow.
And...
Now, did they know you were 13?
Yeah, okay. They did. But the follow-up I did to that was there was a second show, because, you know, it worked. This worked once, so there was another show I was interested in a couple years later, which was produced by Marvel and Sunbow, called Gem and the Holograms.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
And so I did something very similar, except I couldn't even find Sunbow's address. But, of course, since the toys were made by Hasbro, I just wanted Sunbow's address. So I sent not the premises, but just a very short letter to Hasbro asking them for Sunbow's address. That letter, not naming my age or anything, it went to the senior manager of production at Sunbow, who called my house. She's in New York, mind you, and I'm on the West Coast. I lived in Washington State still. She calls home only to be told that I'm still in high school for the day. When can she try you back?
Oh, no.
So I wound up getting to talk to her on the phone in person at 6 in the morning one morning. And I told her that, you know, I was really hoping to get in touch with the person who developed the show for them. And she said, okay, send me on what you want to send, and I'll forward it, just like the executive had done for me before. She says, I can't promise anything.
Right.
Well, again, you know, a couple months later, I get a package in the mail from Christy Marks, who I can now proudly say I've been friends with for almost 20 years.
Wow.
And she sent me, you know, a copy of, here's what the show Bible looks like, here's what an animation script looks like. These were not things I had gotten previously. Those were my first exposure at that point at 15 to what the structure of things should look like.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, this is what I need. Cool. But after that, it was really a matter of needing to pick up, you know, the knowledge and bridge the gap. And because I had gone in the school district I was in, there's also one of the state universities in the town I grew up in, Cheney, Washington. And so we had an agreement with the university that we could take a certain amount of courses there. Bear in mind, this was the late 1980s, before some of these bridge programs and stuff were more common. And so I had worked it out to be able to take some live-action-based radio TV courses at the university my senior year of high school. And they essentially made me a deal that, and I had been doing them at basically an audit rate, and they were giving me the grades for high school, but I wasn't getting them for a college transcript. They basically made me a deal that was, you come to Eastern for the rest of your degree, we will give you the 26 units you've already taken for no additional money.
Wow.
Couldn't pass that one up.
Yeah, nice.
So I stayed there instead of, truthfully, it might have benefited me to have looked for a college that, say, better specialized in animation or whatever, but those are also far more prevalent now than they were in 1990.
Right.
So I wound up staying at Eastern Washington University and focusing on learning live-action screenwriting, of which many of the elements are still very, very applicable. It's really needing to understand staging and setting up shots, especially if you're doing shot-by-shot calls in an animation script, which actually a lot of the stuff I learned from learning live-action camera
Right. Taught
me how to think that way. So it really all translated. It's just not what I think your normal route would be today.
Right. So that leads you to what point in your life?
Okay. That gets me to about early 1996. I graduated at the end of 94 and then worked for a while in a UCD shop trying to save up enough money because I knew I had to move to LA. I knew this is where the business was, but I'd been living at home with my parents the whole time. I could walk to school. I mean, I could walk to high school. I could walk to Eastern. There was no incentive to leave home. So I had to earn the money to think about moving forward. Well, one day, Christy gives me a call and says there's somebody else that she knows, another writer, who is, he and his family are going to be taking 2 weeks off to go to Hawaii, and he needs someone to house at his house. And she says, I'd like to recommend you, and this is a perfect opportunity for you to come down and see LA for 2 weeks and see if you think it'll work for you. Because you have to bear in mind, at this point, I've lived in a town that, at that point, didn't even have 10,000 people in it.
Right.
For, oh, a little over a decade.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, trying to transplant myself down here.
Right.
It was like, okay, you know, this is a good, you know, test the feet in the water, and if I don't like it, I can turn around and go back home. So
right.
I said, sure, no problem. And so June 20th, 1996, I got on a plane. I came down to Los Angeles and didn't leave.
Wow, that's a major move.
Yeah, it is. And for the first couple months, like I said, I did decide to stay, but I had no work. All the money that I had earned went away, and I was getting pretty desperate. And as it turned out, it was a friend of a friend of a friend knew of a very, very short-term gig as a production assistant on Jumanji, the animated series. And they said, look, this is only for a few weeks. They just need someone to finish out the season. They're not even sure if they're getting a renewal. And I said, you know what? If I just have to work a few weeks and then have to go right back home, at least I went home saying I did something.
Right, right.
And I really love the industry. It's like, it's a chance for me to learn it from a different angle, because animation production and the stuff that I had learned about live action production, I mean, they were similar, but I also knew there were differences. And I'm like, you know, throw me in there. I'll learn everything, which basically being a production assistant in animation is, you know, glorified copy person for the most part. You're basically having to run off the models and do whatever needs doing. And I said, that's fine. And not only did they get the renewal, they also got another show picked up for which they needed production coordinators, which is the next step up the rung. And they were so happy with the work that I had done, they instantly promoted me up to become the first of, at one point, was 6 production coordinators on Extreme Ghostbusters. We had so much stuff we had to turn out so fast.
Wow.
What was the feeling like when you approached and you heard those words?
It was like, first it was relief, the idea that I didn't have to turn around and go home. And secondly, the idea that, wow, I guess I really am, you know, meant to be around this.
At any point, did you doubt yourself when you got the job? Were you concerned that you weren't going to be able to, I guess, live up to their expectations, you know, where they're, you know, have that little, the jitters?
Oddly, not then. Were the first part where I really doubted a choice that I'd made. And looking back, I think for me, it worked out, though it was not the easiest route. You have to remember from the beginning what I said is that my primary goal as a teenager had been to be an animation writer.
Right.
After spending a year in production, it was essentially a brand new shop, and it was frenzied production. Like I told you, we had 6 production, you know, coordinators, supervisors, and we alternated titles on Extreme Ghostbusters. After a while, that just got like, wow, this is a little overwhelming. I like what I'm doing, but I'm worn down. I came here to be a writer. That was my feeling. And so, and seeing a lot of jobs there at the time, and that everything was going into post-production, I felt confident with walking away from a job, something I'd never done before. And I would say, in hindsight, it's something that I think I should have thought about a little more carefully, because I did not see the bus that was literally right around the corner.
Wow. What do you mean?
But it paid off in the long run, because I learned, I went out, I learned what I wanted to learn. I have since made sales to shows, but there were some really lean times in between. Like right after Sony, I wound up temping in all kinds of bizarre places for a year, from Cedar Sinai to USC to, I enjoyed my time at Brayley Institute a little better, but that's my point. That was not where I expected to be.
Right. Well. Wow.
And so when you make a choice to walk away from something like that, even if you love it, I mean, that's one of the first things I would say is think long and hard before you do it. And I just didn't have the life experience to be prepared for the decision that I had made.
Right.
Because like I said, I went from my parents' house to that tiny little bit of, okay, I'm settling in, to this great year to, oh, I feel so confident I can just.
Right.
No. But like I said, it's 11 years later and I'm still here.
Nice. So what, after that year of just going from job to job, and not certain what were you going to get next? I mean, how did you get out of that rut? What was the position that you secured?
Well, what basically happened there was I was fortunate enough to get an administrative assistant position at a retail store that caters to writers, known as, appropriately enough, the Writer's Store. In West Los Angeles. Basically, they sell screenwriting software and software to fiction writers as well as a wide variety of books. I became their administrative assistant as well as their book buyer for the next 2 years. That allowed me pretty much the comfort of being able to do something in the day that was at least related to what I knew. And then I could still come home at night and write. I was still writing, writing specs and stuff on the side, even when I was temping, but at least I had I had that bit of security around me. One of the other things that was really nice in that period of time was that I also started taking classes through UCLA Extension to fill in the gaps that my instructors at Eastern could not have filled in for me.
Right.
One in particular was there was a course on... In fact, it was a two-semester course on the entire animation production process. It largely focused on taking an animation script from start to finish, but it was everything else as well. And part of me said, but you've already done that. You've worked at a studio already. And I thought, well, I think I'd like to hear from people with other experiences because I've only worked at one studio.
Right.
And secondly, I've never really had someone walk through my script from beginning to end, like a story editor, because in that class we basically generated a spec for an animated series, and instructor basically served as our story editor and beat up on us as appropriate all the way through. And so I decided I wanted to do that, and it took a little negotiating to be able to work Saturdays instead of Wednesday nights, because it was a Wednesday night class, and there was no way I could get to where it was being taught from the west side all the way to Universal City.
Right.
But I pulled that off, and I'm grateful for it because that was how I got to meet two very fantastic animation writers, Kevin Hopps and Greg Weissman.
Yes, Greg Weissman. I had the pleasure of interviewing him on the show.
And he was the one I got for my story editor, and I'm glad. He gave me one of the hardest workouts I've ever had in my life. Anything I could have possibly done wrong, he pointed out, and I'm glad for it. Because, like I said, I was largely self-taught. So it's like I understood the form, I understood what I had to do, but there were a lot of finer points that you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And I'm like, okay, I'll keep trying.
Right.
And that's the thing, if I had not decided that I was going to pursue that path and just keep running solely with my self-taught training, who knows where I might have wound up. It might have taken even longer than it did.
Right. Wow.
So now, fast forward a bit to, I've
been to your website, and I'm looking at your credits, and I'm looking at some of your speaking engagements, and you're pretty busy now. And you have a book that's out now called The Gardener's Guide to Writing and Producing Animation.
Yep.
Did you ever think it would lead up to this point?
Not initially. Basically, how that book came about was the writer's store, I had the fortune to briefly be on the second season of the short-lived second season of Invader Zim, I should say.
Okay.
And after that, I desperately had been needing to freelance, because there wasn't work for a long, long, long time. That was even worse than the first time. But what had happened is, over that period of time, I had accumulated a lot of columns that I had written for various sites on the internet that I had the rights to. And I was trying to find a publisher to republish them packaged with some new material. And that's how I initially approached this company. They said, that doesn't really fit our needs, but we'd really like to have a book on the production process from beginning to end. And I said, okay, I've been in most phases of that now, and what I don't know, I can research. I'll be happy to do that. But one of the first things that immediately occurred to me is that animation is a team effort. I could sit here and write, but there's a lot of stuff that, you know, I don't know because I haven't lived it.
Right.
I knew what I had to go get.
Right.
I just knew that, yeah, I could regurgitate a lot of secondhand stuff, but what mattered to me most during my voyage from being that 13-year-old in Cheney, Washington,
right,
to now, was being able to directly learn and interact one-on-one with the pros. And that's why very early on I decided I was going to do the spotlight interviews that appear in that book. There are half page to a couple page, depending on who it is, of 18 different pros in all phases, in every aspect, from early on in deciding the concept to people in marketing and distribution and everything in between. It's like, hear it from their mouths too.
Right.
And I'm thankful to all of them for being a part of that. It made it very special to me, because I feel like now people can have in their hands the kind of stuff I would have wanted to have when I was 13, when I was 15. That's the kind of person I had in my head when I wrote this. Somebody starting at the very beginning who wants to know everything. And it's like, there it is.
Well, so was it a challenge to get their participation? Or did you have any anxiety about asking?
Some people I already knew, but not everyone. There were a few people, because there were certain roles that I knew in the book. Like, I knew I want to talk about this job or this job, and I didn't know those people.
Right.
So I had to go ask the people I knew who I knew those people. That was actually the hardest part, was to go, look, I know that you know me real well, but how do you feel about connecting me with somebody, you know, basically making a referral for me for this book that you haven't seen? All you know is me. You know I can write because you've seen my other stuff or you've worked with me. Yet, even though I had good relationships with the people I was asking, it was still very scary to do. And I think I only got turned down a couple of times, and those weren't by the secondaries. Anybody who was a secondary referral said yes. It was the couple people that did turn me down just didn't have the time. But they were people who already knew me.
Wow. Wow. So now, how long did it take you to put this body of work together?
Well, this particular one took me 6 months to put together. But because of the way that it then went through the process, through the editing and proofing and the printer, didn't get out till this past July, though I had turned it in about a year prior.
Wow.
So that's one thing. That's the one thing I learned about print publishing, is that it can be, you know, slow depending on where things are. It's just sort of like I had expected it to go faster, but sometimes things are the way they are. I mean, I'm sure you've, in, you know, talking to other guests and in your own personal experience, you're familiar with some of those issues too.
Yeah. So what has that done, the release of this book? What has it done to your career now? Has it affected you in any certain way? Has there been a spike in the meter?
For me mainly, it's made me finally feel like I can give back. I know that I would not be in the position that I am, you know, having worked on the shows that I did, having to, you know, and we didn't even touch on the fact I did get to do five scripts for a show that's only airing in Japan, because it's one of those, we talked about things that don't translate across very well. It's a cute yet dark humorous show called Midnight Horror School. And that was an incredibly fun experience to do. But the point of what I'm leading to is that here I am, I know that I got to do what I set out to do and so much more, but that's because other people helped me, gave me information. And I feel like that in this book, I've been able to embody, you know, my shot and my chance of that. And I'm like, so who gets to follow me? Who am I paying it forward to?
Right.
Because to me, it's always about giving and taking, and this is my turn to give.
Wow.
And I
noticed that you're doing, you have a 2008 appearance coming up at the anime convention.
Yep, I have been asked to appear at Anime Los Angeles 2008, which is in Burbank, January 4th, 5th, and 6th. We're still working on the exact programming placement, but I'm very much looking forward to that.
And you also appeared at San Diego this past July, right?
Yeah, I was at both San Diego and also at WonderCon in San Francisco. I did basically the same panel at both, which was basically talking about the animation production process through development and production. And I had different slates of writers and producer writers with me at both of those. And I totally, totally enjoyed doing that. I mean, there's obviously promotion for the book tied up in that, but
right.
Mainly to be able to help facilitate, you know, these folks being able to share direct one-on-one information that fit the individual questions of the attendees. It was amazing the stuff that people came up with. It was, at WonderCon in particular, we packed the room. I was like, wow. I thank everybody for turning out. I really enjoyed those.
Wow, nice. What was the feedback? Have you gotten any feedback based on your book?
I haven't gotten too much from the average reader. I'd like to hear that very much. I know people professionally are noticing because they've all dropped me lines, or that they've heard about it, or that they saw the bit about the panel release from San Diego where the book was mentioned. But I really would like, you know, more people to stop by, you know, www.shannonmuir.com with the dash between my first and last name. I hope you don't mind if I plug that.
No, go ahead.
And give me that feedback. I'd like to hear it. I really would.
Right, because I'm on Amazon.com, and it says there's only one left in stock, but the reorder's on their way.
You know what? That is the third time that's come up since it came out.
That's outstanding.
I don't know how many they keep at any given time, but to see that happen three times since the end of July?
Right.
I don't care if it's 5 or if it's 100 or whatever they keep around. The idea that message keeps showing up?
Yeah.
I'm pleased. I mean, I wish I had better numbers to tell you, but that's more than I expected to see.
Right. Now, what do you have in store for the near future? Is it?
Well, right now I'm pretty much available. I just completed a follow-up book that's a companion, actually, to this one that actually deals a lot more with development. The writing and producing animation is primarily geared to people who want to either be independent producers, you know, make their own stuff and get it out there, or find out just how the process works.
Right.
The other book I just finished is for those folks who want to make pitches to the folks who the first book is intended for.
Right.
I don't have any firm timeline on that yet because I just turned it in, literally. But I'm hoping that we will see that in 2008. And I've had the few questions that I have had have surrounded, like, we want more, we want more. It's like, this is, I'm trying to do my best to answer that because I wanted more too. But to have answered that in the writing section in the detail it needed to be done was going to make this book astronomical. That was a whole universe in itself.
Wow. So, and now I understand that you also have a webcomic.
Yes, I do. It's called Flying Glory and the Hounds of Glory. I collaborate on that with someone by the name of Kevin Paul Shaw Broden, and yes, he really does have four names. he's trained in narrative illustration because he originally wanted to be a comic book illustrator when he got his degree in art in college, and he too found that what he liked most, just as much as art, was the storytelling. He collaborated on a couple of Midnight Horror School scripts with me as well, and has done some other stuff on his own. But basically, we were hoping to, and still are, to sell the property. So we started just churning it out as, you know, we had time, and we've been doing it for 5 years. Basically, it's the story of a teenage girl and who just originally wanted to have a, you know, successful rock band with her friends, and happens to be a granddaughter of a famous World War II superhero who one day finds out the powers wake up and is initially tempted to use them for self-promotion, but in more recent issues of the comic has now encountered some more real-life issues that are making her have to balance, well, how do I use the powers? How do I just work on growing up? And that's, we initially were looking at more of the, you know, superhero on top, you know, teen angst on bottom, but the story told us where it wanted to go, and it reversed those, and I'm happy for it. But anybody who goes to the site and sees the issues will notice a bit of a tonal difference once you hit issue 6. It does change, but I do think we segued into it pretty well. We, you know, we're still telling it. We've got enough stuff that we've got an entire first graphic novel registered with the Library of Congress. We'd love to keep doing this thing in print, but until then, we're just gonna keep doing it as best we can, because it's not like we're not like Megatokyo or anything. We haven't made, you know, gazillion bounce of money off of it. It's just something we're doing out of the bottom of our hearts because the characters want us to tell their story.
Well,
so what's that experience like working on a comic book?
For me, it was quite a challenge. Kevin's been into it a lot longer than I. It originally started as, see, he and I met originally online on a service that is long, long since gone called Genie. And we were in mutual, this is when I was still in Washington. We were in mutual forums on science fiction, on comics, and the like. And he had done a comic script with basically the World War II version of Flying Glory. And he'd gotten comments, this is really great, but it's probably not going to sell in today's market. And, you know, I just stepped forward and I said to him, he kind of hinted that, you know, I had some ideas, but, you know, if he wanted to collaborate, I'd work with him. But, you know, I certainly wasn't pressuring him, and he asked me for my opinion, and what we have up there now is the result. And I'm glad, because he's the best friend I could have ever asked for. But the thing is that I'm learning that the storytelling limitations, if you look at our early issue, we let the story, and that was the case where we let the story kind of take over, and they'll vary. They'll be like 29, 30, 40, I think, are the first three issues. And after that, we said, no, we're going to stick to 24. We know this isn't in print, but it made us discipline ourselves to say we can't have more than 24 pages an issue. It makes it really hard sometimes, especially when I force him into a situation where he has to draw 9 panels on a page.
Right.
We had one of those, and it's like, I can make this work, but it's tricky. I said, that's the point. So we're challenging each other. basically, we both collaborate on the script. He draws, and then he kicks me back each page in pencils and inks. And I basically act as editor and tell him, that doesn't work, that doesn't make sense. Because there's some things, until he draws it, I'd realize, do or don't work. Sometimes you just can't tell from the words on the page. And it's just like animation's that way, too. Sometimes things will get called for, and not until you get the footage back, and you're like, huh? How did it get misinterpreted that way?
Right.
Trust me, it happens.
So now, if someone wanted to find out more about you, they would go to your website, which is...
Yeah, that's www.shannon, S-H-A-N-N-O-N, -M-U-I-R.com.
And if they want to know more about your publisher, where would they go?
Oh, absolutely. They can go to www.ggcinc.com. That's short for Garth Gardner Company Incorporated.
And they specifically focus on animation?
They specifically focus on educational books for animation and multimedia, yes.
Okay. Okay.
But, and the majority of the stuff that they do, I would say they largely do animation and multimedia. They're starting to do some books for live action. And even playwriting, I think, was something that I saw, too. So they may be expanding in other areas. That would be something to take up more directly with them if anybody's interested in finding out more that way.
Right. Now,
is there anything you want to your audience to take away from this conversation? Any words of advice if someone's looking to break into the industry?
I would definitely say to someone, first and foremost, it is very competitive out there, so definitely, you know, be sure of what you want to do. Do your research and look into who's doing what you want to do, and try to start targeting, you know, them first to build relationships. Learn everything you can, even if it doesn't seem like it's directly applicable to what it is that you want to do. That's why I did the book about the entire production process, because even though I primarily wanted to be a writer, if I hadn't, you know, had interest in those other areas, even when I got my live action degree, there's things that I was able to bring across and understand conceptually because I at least attempted everything, even if I wasn't good at it. So whenever you have the opportunity to learn something, learn it. Specifically if you want to be a writer, read and write a lot. That's a must. It's a tough call these days with so much where people are able to produce stuff independently. It used to be said that you really had to go to like LA or New York were the only things. I think to an extent that's still largely true, but especially if you're someone who, you know, who can draw, who can, you know, make your own stuff on your own equipment with the distribution channels there are out there now. You know, YouTubes and people with their media centers and whatever, that whole game has changed so much that you can get exposure different ways. Don't be afraid to look into anything, but, you know, read the fine print carefully before you try anything. And most of all, don't give up, because sometimes there are some really dark periods come at you out of the blue. Like I said, I temped for like a year at a time a couple times without steady work, but that's the key thing. I didn't give up, and 11 years later, I'm still here because I firmly believe this is where I should be, and this is what I want to be doing.
Outstanding.
Now, as a final note, besides your book, what did you read and that you would recommend to listeners out there to use as reference?
Are you speaking
as far as
specifically for the animation writing or
anything in related to the industry that you're in, whether it's writing, producing, any specific books that you would recommend?
Okay, there actually aren't many other books on producing animation. The only other one that I really know of is called appropriately producing animation. I can't remember the two women who wrote it. It's fairly well done as well. I realize I'm plugging my competition, but there are certain aspects of the way that I did mine and the way they did theirs that I think are also very different, and I think that they're equally valid from learning from. The books that I've liked the most, specifically in regards to the animation writing, have been Writing for Animation Comics and Games by Christy Marks, and also How to Write for Animation by Jeffrey Scott. But there's a lot of other ones that are out there, some of which I haven't read yet. Okay. But those are the main ones off the top of my head I would recommend.
Outstanding.
Well, thank you, Shannon, for being on Cast of Craze, and we look forward to hearing more about and we'll be watching as your career blossoms and continues to grow. And we'll probably run into each other at an event someday. And if you want to find out more on Shannon, we'll have a link on the website, and this show will be up and running forever, as long as Cast of Craze is around. And thanks again.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Check the flow, cause you know I got soul. The name is Cast of Craze, baby, so act like you know what's called Cast of Craze. Cast of Craze, the one originator, the crazy creator, giving you a fever with my poor dreamer Medina. Weekly all the time with the newest and the best independence from the north, the south, east, the west. You got the SSS and the devils that are silent. Kiss me comics, cause it ain't all about violence. Neat stuff collects in the brothers, the Dables. Crazy comics in the house are willing and able. The underground sounds from hip hop to rock. Jamming on the saxophone is my boy Philip Clark, cause I'm keeps it going, cause you know I got the flow. The name is Uncle Sam, act like you know.
Cast of Craze. Cast of Craze.
Yeah. I'm bugging out, baby.
Cast of Craze.
Spread the word, have you heard?